welcome to The Deuce, episode 11. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And today we will be deucing
Hellboy 2, Golden Army.
The Golden Army, not the Silver Army, because
no.
That would be second place.
That would be, yeah.
But the Golden Army, right?
Correct.
And so we're gonna do that, and we're gonna have special guests.
Yep.
Right. We are going to have Court from the Cinema PsyOps podcast.
Correct.
That is going to join us here soon, and we're going to talk about that, have a little fun, and go from there. But first, we want to introduce a new segment where we like to say that if you like our podcast. We say to check out these other podcasts, but don't take our word for it.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema PsyOps is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get
it's
out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be
did
a rough
you watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema PsyOps.
And we're back.
Yeah, and we have Court from Cinema PsyOps. You just heard him in that promo. We want to welcome him to the show.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
Great.
Pretty good.
I'm really excited to have you on here. So for those of you who don't know, we kind of talked about it in our special before, too. So Court and I go way back. We used to work together back in the day, and we actually started the Geek Chat Army podcast together with our friend Ben. And kind of went on hiatus for a little bit because we were just waylaid by jackassery all the time.
Tomfoolery.
Yeah, he came back and started it up. And during that period, too, Court also started doing Cinema PsyOps with Matt. And they've been doing very well. So how have things been going with the podcast lately?
Oh, it's been excellent. It seems like we just gain more and more listeners as we've been going on. We're coming up on almost 2 years now.
That's crazy.
For Cinema PsyOps.
Wow. You've put up
we've
with
actually,
Matt for 2 years.
well, much longer than that, but I've been recording with him for 2 years.
You deserve a medal. Nearly. No, I'm just joking. Matt's a good guy. We like Matt.
Well, yeah. I'm no easy person to get along with in certain aspects either. I mean, I goad him just as much as he goads me, so... We put up with each other. It's a very dysfunctional family between
yeah.
the two of us.
But and I loved being on there and just being able to like.
Right.
There's an episode that I was on there with you, and I just loved it. And you know, we wanted to make sure that when we got ours going, and got to this point, that we had the opportunity to invite you on to share some information with us. And you know, and this is, I think, a perfect one for you to join in on.
But you're a big
Hellboy
fan.
A big Hellboy fan, absolutely, yeah. Okay.
And I don't
particularly
know.
Of this film. I actually enjoy the second one more than the first.
Yeah,
and
yeah, and
we'll,
I don't.
We'll get into that more.
Going into it,
but.
I haven't seen Hellboy 1. I haven't read any of the comics. I really didn't know. I went in very cold. So
yeah.
There's that. And then Jeremy, of course, has seen.
Oh yeah. Well, I saw the second movie with Court in theaters.
Okay. Yeah.
And I went with two friends and. I kept thinking one of them is going to like it and one of them is going to hate it. And for some reason, like at the beginning, I was like, man, Court's going to hate this. And after it played, Court was like, are you nuts? This is really? I love this movie.
Out of those two people, you thought
I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. I think it's because compared to the first movie, there's much more of like a fantasy aspect to this one. And I wasn't sure where Court was down with that at the time. Now
it's also not nearly as dark as the first movie, so I could see where you might assume that I would not enjoy the fact that it was so fantastical and more lighthearted.
Much darker. Oh, okay.
Yeah, this one it's much more vibrant and colorful, and like I don't know, it's much more, I don't know if lighthearted is the word, but it's different than the first one. Okay. The first one kind of deals with like the grittiness.
We'll get into
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's time to drop the deuce.
Drop
on
the
Hellboy
deuce.
2.
All right. So why don't we get kicked off? So, so this movie, we've talked about this before, where you know you have that exposition where you want to go back and they kind of recap what was happening in the first movie. I think it does it really well in this one. It basically just puts up like a little title card that says, you know, in 1944. In the Germans tried to summon a demon kind of a thing, and they found the creature, but instead of destroying it, they raised it, and that creature became Hellboy, or that
demon.
And
I did enjoy this beginning. It kind of felt like very Neil Gaiman, very, you know, Tim Burton, Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yeah.
In kind of the mythos of a way. And I really enjoyed that. And so is the comic book really... like hinged in mythos, like is it very strong with that?
Very much so. Very much.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that aspect.
And I would almost put it on par with, as far as like the mythos goes, I would put it on par with Fables. Okay. If, for those of you who read, it's a DC property under their Vertigo line. It Fables is very much like they take not just like well-known fairy tales and things like that, but they also take very obscure stories and fairy tales and bring them to light. Cause there've been stuff where I've had to go, oh my gosh, what is this? And look it up. Mm-hmm. Hellboy was always kind of the same thing. They take this mythology and they really put in like very specific things where you're like, what the hell is that? And you have to go back and like, it's stuff that they have looked and researched and come up with. So it's very interesting.
R.I.P.
I always said that Mike Mignola makes sort of like a martini out of occult, fairy tales, mythology, folklore, and all this stuff. And then the result is this delicious dish that is Hellboy.
Oh, yeah. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
See, you're so eloquent, Corey.
Yes.
This is why we have you on.
I just make fart jokes.
Well, I do that as well, but I try to make them as eloquent as possible.
There you go. R.I.P. John Hurt, right? He just recently passed away.
Yeah. So, so he plays Professor Broom. So we actually open up, and he has a much bigger role in the first. So this was a nice callback.
Okay.
Yeah. But we open up on Professor Broom and Little Hellboy, the
voiced
little
by a 35-year-old woman.
Yeah. Well, the kid had so much like fake teeth and appliances in his mouth that I don't really think he could talk, so they overdubbed him with like a, you know, Julie Kavner kind of thing. So, we open up and it's on a military base at Christmas time, and Professor Broom tells Hellboy to go to bed because Santa won't show up otherwise. And he won't go to bed without a story. So he tells him the story of the Golden Army. And it's a very cool scene to like what Bradley was referring to. It's almost like this like computer-generated claymation-looking or stop-motion animation-looking thing. But it's computer-generated, of course. But
a lot of this movie reminded me of when we watched Mirror Mask.
Yeah.
Just the eye candy of itself through the special effects and the practical effects were really well done.
Yes.
You can expect that from almost every Guillermo del Toro film, even the ones that he didn't have as much control over.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and there's parts of this, too, we call back to on, like, I know that we were like, oh, man, that's like Pan's Labyrinth.
Right.
You know,
this came
just,
after
little bits,
Pan's Labyrinth.
But you can just see, like, he has such a... between him and Mike Mignola, they have just such a very stylized view of things that I really
They're
love.
They're good
his
at setting
stuff.
Up a universe and making sure that it breathes light into something huge and vast in a way.
Yep.
Mignolia seems to use shadow more with a lot of his art. You see a lot of the creatures are very shadowed and covered, like you would see in a lot of comic books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Guillermo del Toro's creation of Hellboy and Hellboy 2, the thing that he kind of contributed to it is it's almost like he was shining a spotlight on these creatures so you can see them better, because that's what he loves to do. He likes to have them out front, right there, and just like show you the glorious beauty of these otherworldly things that you don't normally get to experience. Mm-hmm. And he always treats what other people would call as monsters as like these beautiful creatures that have every right to exist. And that's one of the things that I love about the man.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And in turn, that's kind of what Hellboy is, or what, you know, kind of you get from Hellboy.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they're like, oh, you're ugly, you know, but he's kind of a brute that has a heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So the story goes that Professor Prim is telling Lil Hellboy it was...
Lil Hellboy.
He tells the story that man and mystical creatures used to all live together, everything commingled. But man had a hole in his heart, and because of that was greedy and could never fill it. And so... the man started a war with everybody else, and the toll was terrible. Everybody was injured. There was King Baylor, the one-armed elf king, commissioned a golden army to be created, and this golden army was controlled by a crown that could only be worn by a royal. So they were unstoppable and unfeeling, so he unleashes this army on man, and they were indestructible, and the toll was even worse. Because they just killed, and they didn't care who they killed.
Oh, okay.
And so the Elf King felt so terrible that he approached man and agreed to a truce. That they would stay to the cities, man would stay to the cities, and the forests would belong to everybody else.
Okay, yeah.
And he broke the crown into three pieces, two that the elves would hold on to, and then one would man would hold on to. And then they went their separate ways. But obviously, we know these days, you know, humans encroach on the forest all the time. So
Trump.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
So everything is kind of, you know, slipping, and obviously we haven't lived up to our end of the bargain. But in the story, Prince Nuada, who is the king's son, the one who urged him to have the army built, basically gets angry and for how could he come to a truce with the humans. So he leaves, vowing to return one day when his people needed him the most. So it comes back to Hellboy, who says, oh, come on, that's just a story, isn't it? And Professor Broom says, well, it might be, it might not be. Go to sleep, bitch, and just basically goes to bed.
Yeah. Ooh, or is it?
Or is it?
Ooh, in all John Hurtiness.
Yes. So.
By the way, I want him to read me a bedtime story.
In the style of John.
Because I love his voice.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He'll be missed.
Yes, he will be.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut the present day, and
with,
we see
Prince Anawana.
Yes, Nuada.
Oh, not like Camp Anawana. Sorry, I got that wrong.
But by the way. Prince Nuada is played by Luke Goss.
Luke Goss, yeah.
Who was the same guy who played Nomak, the Reaper vampire in Blade 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, and who was amazing with his fights then.
When you first saw this, you were like, what's albino Tom Cruise doing?
Well, I thought he was Tom Cruise, and I was like, I think I leaned over to Court and said, I can't believe Tom Cruise did this movie. And he's like, what are you talking about? But he kind of...
Yeah, I was like, no, dude, that's Nomak from Blade 2.
Yeah. But to me, he like, in this, I guess, I don't know if it's his long hair or what, but I think he, like, looks and sounds like Tom...
At the beginning, he sounded like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And so, yeah. But I think Court was one
like
of
Tom Cruise if he was on. Actually... Like Tom Cruise if he was actually able to emote and have any kind of emotion behind his actual acting.
Yes. Or do, you know, stunts to that degree. I think he injured himself out after... He burned out after Mission
tall.
Impossible 2. So, we open up and we see Nuada doing his... some sort of, like, aerobics under the city. Where he's basically training. And he has this kind of, like... It's cool.
Aerobics?
He was doing Taibo? He was doing calisthenics under the... He's doing the...
What's he under the Brooklyn Bridge doing Taibo? Yeah. No, come on.
But he has, so he has this cool thing, and I love this weapon. It's like,
yeah, that thing's
it's like
cool.
A short handle, like little spear, or it almost looks like a knife of some kind. So he uses it like a little blade, but then he can extend it out into a full length staff.
Now, Court, this character is not in the comic books, is he? Is he just for the movie? Do you know?
No, he actually, the Golden Army storyline is based in the comic books.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff with, I can't remember exactly if Prince Nuada was one of the characters or not, but I do remember the Golden Army being a storyline.
Because he's pretty kick ass. Like, I love his character. I mean, he's just badass in this movie.
One of the things that I think Del Toro does really well is he'll take characters that may or may not be throwaway characters in Mignola's comic book and extend them out and give them a whole new life. Or he'll take the aesthetic of them and the general idea of them and turn them into something else. But that'll like help along the way with his storyline. This film feels a lot more like some stuff that he inserted into the stories more than what you would get in the first Hellboy, which followed a little bit more the Seeds of Destruction storyline. But I can't recall right off the top of my head because I haven't actually read Golden Army, but I know it exists.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't really know for sure if Nuada is part of that or not, but he very much could have been one of the characters that would have shown up but got fleshed out in such a way, because Del Toro really loves these. He loves these very sympathetic villains where you understand what it is that they're trying to do.
Even him in Blade 2 is like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you understand what they're trying to do, but you're like, this is the wrong way to do it, you know? Like, he's literally like, he knows his people are about to be extinct, so he wants to completely eliminate the threat instead of trying to find a balance.
Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things that makes a good villain, too, is when your villain thinks they're the hero. I think that
like a Magneto. Yeah,
Magneto. Exactly. And it really kind of is a parallel of this, right? Like Magneto is, he's trying to help mutants, but he's doing it through violent means rather than, you know, building that bridge. Okay. So same kind of a deal.
And in the X-Men movies, it's almost a direct parallel where he literally wants to eliminate normal humanity or non-mutant humanity in order to save his own people.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So we see Prince Nuada doing all this stuff with the spear, just training. And finally, Mr. Wink walks up. So
Martindale.
Mr. Wink.
Martindale.
Yes, Mr. Wink Martindale comes up, who is this like giant ogre with the metal hand, kind of, I think it's to remind us of Hellboy's hand.
He looks like Wink Martindale.
He does. It's just like him.
There's actually an ape that the Nazis made that they were trying to replicate what Hellboy does with a hand and all. And I think the character of Wink is a reference to that ape because
makes sense.
They put in, it wasn't a stone hand. He had like a metallic hand just like that. And I think it's one of those things I was talking about earlier where it's a visual clue to this other character that Del Toro was like, well, I like this, but you didn't do a whole lot with it. So let's flesh this out. So they made him, I think he's like a troll. I think they said, or something
that's
along those lines.
Yes, he's a troll.
Yeah. Okay. Man, Wink's great. I mean, he's one of the better characters in the film. You see you get so much from him, and he doesn't really say a single word we can understand.
That's true. Yeah.
So he shows up and starts conversing with Nuada. Basically, Nuada says that he has a plan that they're going to unleash on man, and he has these two boxes. Basically, we can see something inside it is moving, and he tells Mr. Wink that they haven't been fed in preparation for this, so it's not going to be good. So we cut to this Manhattan auction house. So all your hoity-toity fancy pants types. And they're all bidding.
A lot of extended pinkies in that room.
Yes.
Yes.
And a lot of dropped monocles, those kind of things.
My monocle. I dropped.
I'm so shocked. So the lights go out. After they announce that they have this crown piece that they're auctioning off, or they say it's like from some forgotten culture, and the lights go out, and Prince Nuada shows up and basically starts telling them it's not from some forgotten culture, it's from, you know, it's from this beautiful culture that you people tread on. And he brings the box, one of the boxes, in and sets it down, and then Mr. Wink, his metal hand actually fires off of his arm and busts through the door and comes crawling back to him and, like, recoils to him. and he sets down another box, and basically opens opens the boxes, and we see these little creatures fly out, and then we cut to gotta maintain the suspense. We cut to the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, or BPRD.
Mm-hmm.
And again, referencing
now,
back
to James Comey used to run that too.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know if he was kept fired lots of memos. From that.
The but remember in Blade 2.
Oh yeah.
The one character had a Scud had a BPRD shirt on. So.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So I think he had this in the making for a while, where he, the Hellboy films where he wanted to get in on those.
He's been a big fan of Magnolia for a very long time. It's one of the things he talks about in the commentary of the first movie, that between Jack Kirby and Magnolia, they were like the two bigger influences of comic books in his life.
Oh, yeah. I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
So we run into Tom Manning, again, played by Jeffrey Tambor, a character who returned from the first movie. So he's coming in, he's walking with purpose, and he comes up to Abe Sapien, who's in his tank floating and listening to music, and tells him they need to talk. So Abe Sapien, played by Doug Jones, who in
Silver Surfer.
Yeah, The Rise of the Silver Surfer, played the did the Silver Surfer's body work. And actually, he did the body work in the first Hellboy movie, but they had David Hyde Pierce voice it. And so in this movie, it's Doug Jones doing the body work, and he's doing the voice. But, of course, he has to try to make it sound like David Hyde Pierce to some degree.
Frasier.
Yeah.
Frasier.
So he doesn't go
full. I like David, or I'm not David Hyde Pierce, but I like Doug Jones's voice on this
a lot more. I do, too. I like Doug Jones. I've never even, heard of Doug Jones until I watched the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer movie.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting into him, and now I'm like, wow, this guy's amazing.
And he's in tons of things.
It's the body work that he does.
Yeah, and he's worked with Guillermo del Toro a lot. I mean, he's done tons of things. I can only think of one movie that I saw Doug Jones in where he was not, in some sort of makeup or prosthetic something or other. And I think that was in Mystery Men.
Is he in that?
Yeah, he plays when they do the, superhero
casting
call.
Pencilhead, right?
He's Pencilhead.
He's Pencilhead.
And his son is Pencil Boy or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Son of Pencilhead.
Son of Pencilhead, that's what it is. And so, yeah, that's the only time I can remember doing that. But he was, in... Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't he... he was, the zombie ex-boyfriend in... Hocus Pocus, I think, in a few other things.
This
guy
is underrated. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's been a lot of things. And he does amazing, his body is his instrument. He does these, very fluid movements, and, you'll see it in this. You see it in Pan's Labyrinth. You see it in all sorts of things where he just does these, very grandiose movements. And it's you can just tell. I see stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's Doug Jones. Because I just know... it is. So I was excited that we were able to actually hear him this time too. Because to me, I'm what a bummer that you have to go and do all this body stuff and then nobody gets to hear your voice. So
that's
I'm pretty
David
sure
Hyde
that was a studio decision too to dub David Hyde Pierce over.
Yeah, it had to be.
I'm sure it was. Well, so in the first one,
you know what a big box office draw David Hyde Pierce is.
So in the first one, so in Court and I have talked about this too. When they first were doing the movie, the studios didn't like the idea. They were like, well, could you make it so that Hellboy turns back into, a handsome man during whatever, and then he transforms into the Hellboy, as a creature? That's, his form he can change into. And then, can we give him,
preferably when he gets angry, can you make him Hellboy? And then when he's not, can you make him a Backstreet Boy?
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, can you give him, a cool marketable vehicle to drive? The Hellmobile.
Oh, no.
And Mike Mignola was like, hell to the no. And I think that's when Guillermo del Toro swooped in and was like, dude, I will help you. Let's do this. And they actually, the first movie, it took a while to get where they wanted to go with it because... The studio, they fought the studios every step of the way to make that movie happen. And this one had box office draw on it, too, because it's they've held to their guns with this. They didn't compromise on a lot of stuff.
Well, it's also like, I feel like this is a cult, like, comic book movie. Do you know in a way?
I would say
like,
so.
It's not like a your regular comic book movie. It's just a cult kind of it, too. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it also fell into the cycle before the comic book movies became massive draws like That's they are true. Now with the Marvel cycle. This was sort of like a inner, you know, in between sort of the rise of the first X-Men series and then the actual Marvel drops where it became like big box office to where everybody wants to do it. So it's like this small little hill in the valley that was comic book movies around that time is when Hellboy and Hellboy 2 came out.
Yeah. And so.
Around that time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to the story here real quick. So back to Doug Jones. So Abe Sapien's in his tank. And Manning tells him, the human fish. So Manning tells him, look, Hellboy's been causing trouble again. He's been posing for pictures and, like, showing up on things, all of which he has to pay for and suppress and, like, go through all this action. And he can't keep doing this. Also, he's been using Manning's picture on targets for target practice and then leaving them around so he can see them. And, you know, Abe says, well, look, he's just feeling a little cooped up. He's all his life. He's basically had to stay inside and be off the radar and can't just be out there with everybody else. So as they're walking down the hall nonchalantly, like there's these great shots of like monsters in the background and things happening that they really don't acknowledge because we're to understand this is just their everyday that these monsters are out and about or that are in their facility.
It has, like, a kind of feel of the Men in Black.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, it reminded me of that
Middleman.
And so...
But instead of extraterrestrial, it's supernatural stuff that's showing up.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And so they walk down the hall. Abe tells him that Liz and Hellboy have been fighting again. And as they're going down there, all of a sudden... The vault-sized door to Hellboy's room blows off the hinges and just almost takes them out. It rolls down the hall, and Hellboy gets up. He's smoldering. Turns out they're having a spat, and basically she pretty much just set him on fire.
She's a firecracker. I like that.
So, yeah, they go in the room. She's on fire, just completely covered in flames, so she's a pyrokinetic.
Selma Blair, right.
Yep, Selma Blair plays Liz. She's a pyrokinetic. She says she needs some space, and you can see them kind of arguing. Of course, Hellboy, gets all his cats out from hiding that they all hid when she was starting up in flames because Hellboy is a big cat lover. I wasn't sure if they were the same cats from the first movie, like where he found the kittens.
Well, what do you mean, like the same actor cats or just the same?
Well, if they were supposed to be the same.
Okay.
You get the feeling that he houses as many as he can get his hands on, and maybe they sweep out his room once a year.
I thought Jeremy was asking like if they were like bring in the cat actors from the first movie.
I haven't seen you for a few years.
Oh,
mittens.
Hey, meow, meow. Hey, how are you?
Fancy feast on the catering table.
Before they can get any. Oh, and I think the culmination was Liz asks where her toothbrush is, and Hellboy's like, oh, it's here. And it's sitting in a can of cat food.
Oh, yeah.
And so before anything can get any worse for them, an alarm goes off. So he's saved by the bell.
It's all right.
And so they have to head to that Manhattan auction house. And when they get there, it's just trashed. So they say there were no survivors, no bodies found. Everything's just gone. And you see the walls are torn up and the lights are out still. And just everything is just destroyed. And so they find these boxes with the royal seal on them, and it says they translate it to say the boxes say they're to be delivered in times of war. So Abe starts looking through and figures out that they are tooth fairies, or at least what our version of the tooth fairy is based off of. So they're like Black Forest little pixies that burrow into anything. Including humans, and they may go for the teeth, but eat meat, bone, teeth, anything they can get.
You say that, but Selma Blair was also in the movie Tooth Fairy.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, the creatures, the little tooth fairies, are called that because they live on calcium and therefore go for the teeth first.
Yep.
Whenever they can.
Yeah, and got bones milk. And yeah. Yes, they don't drink enough milk. And basically, while they're looking around, all hell starts breaking loose. So some of the tooth fairies come out and start attacking a guy. Hellboy's trying to save him. While that happens, Abe kind of does that, you know, put your hand out to protect whoever's behind you thing, and touches Liz's stomach, and all of a sudden he goes, "Oh my God," and spins around to her, because he can, just by using his psychometry, he touches her and he can tell that she's pregnant. And so he goes, "Oh my God, you're pregnant." She goes, "No, I'm not." And he's like, "Yeah, you are." And so now she's got that to worry about. So while that's happening, then the Tooth Fairy starts just coming after everybody.
Yeah.
So the team tries to fight their way out. Red shirt kind of agents are getting eaten everywhere. Hellboy rolls this giant statue across the room, and it just crushes a ton of the Tooth Fairies. Liz is going to flare up and just burn them all out. So Abe's trying to find a place to hide. Hellboy's not going to be hurt by it, but Liz knows there's going to be explosions, so she tells Hellboy to stay away from the window. And all of a sudden, you can see Hellboy gets this idea that, hey, I'm going to get out there and let people see me. So he actually positions himself, like, in front of the window, very excited for this. So Liz finally explodes, and when she does, Hellboy gets blown out the window for all the world to see. And it's this kind of cool shot where he's, like, slow motion falling out the window, and he's just got this smile on his face because he knows it's about time. And so now the world knows that the urban legend Hellboy is real. So the world is introduced to him.
That's the big difference between the movies and the comics. In the comics, Hellboy is, like, out. Everybody knows about the BPRD. And the supernatural occurrences that are going on is worldwide. And so they're actually needed, and people tend to respect them more. It's one of those things where he's like, well, this is a creature that's meant to destroy all of humanity, but we fed him pancakes. Now he's on our side. So let's let him go ahead and handle all the things that are
like that
weird
better. Than like the whole hiding thing.
Yeah. It's in Mignola's world. It's just everything. It's normal. It's just like, hey, like, oh, it's the FBI is here.
Right.
Or whoever is here. It's just like any other organization. And actually they have a lot more characters. It's not just, like, Liz and Hellboy.
Oh, they
and
do?
Abe. Yeah, they have other characters who have other specialized powers, which I think you get. There are these...
Jeffrey Tambor turns into a woman, right?
Yes.
Oh, wait, no.
He turns into a Mappa.
No.
He also may have committed some light treason.
Is that Arrested Development reference?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, absolutely. Is that an Arrested Development reference?
Well, I'm sure it wasn't Larry Sanders, I know that.
So, there are these tie-in animated movies. It's like Hellboy, Sword of Storms, and I can't remember what the other one
Blood
was.
Blood and Iron.
Blood and Iron, thank you. And those have, and it has the same voice actors and everything. But
Doug Jones does the voice of Sapien in those, which is much better.
Yeah, exactly. But Selma Blair's in there, and Ron Perlman, and I think it's much more closely tied to the comic than it is these movies. Kind of like in between thing, but you get the sense of like, oh, they're out there, and you get more of like Mignola's kind of art style and the interactions between characters and like things like that show up a lot better. Not that these are one is better than the other, but it's a different feel. Anyway, but
I think the movie versions or the live action movie versions had to be homogenized in a way to make it usable in theaters for a more broad audience.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas your animated films that they did, they can do at a lower budget. They can do more stuff with it because it's animated.
Right.
And they know that it's going to be a core audience. So they gear it more towards that, particularly Sword of Storms, because that's got way more fantastical elements than even Hellboy 2 does.
Oh, yeah, I agree. We'll have to watch those sometime.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I'm down for it.
So, the after Hellboy has been knocked out, Prince Nuada goes to see the king. So he gets in there, and this Chamberlain asks him to relinquish his weapons. So
did you say Wilt Chamberlain?
Yep. Wilt Chamberlain asks him to relinquish his weapons. Wilt Chamberlain being a mystical creature.
I think Wilt Chamberlain only has one weapon.
And it's a big one. So shit almost gets real. So Prince Nuada, you know, busts out his weapon. He's not about to give it up. And Princess Nuala, his twin sister, shows up and asks him, hey, just come on, just give it to him. And so he does, because he's creepy with his sister. So he gives it to her, or gives it to the Chamberlain.
He's no more creepier than Luke Skywalker was with his sister, let's be fair.
This is a little bit more creepy.
Yeah, they're a little bit more creepy. We're talking like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in the Ultimates, more creepy than... More towards that end of the spectrum than the other way.
The Chamberlain, actually, it was supposed to be Christopher Lee, but he couldn't do the role.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That would have been glorious. That would have been so glorious.
Mm-hmm. I know. Wow, that would have been so cool. Now that's all I can think about. But Hellboy, we cut back to the BPRD. Hellboy is just watching himself on all of the media. Everybody's talking about Hellboy and his team. And, of course, we have Jimmy Kimmel, you pointed out. He was like, oh, yeah. I forget that Jimmy Kimmel's been on that long.
Right. I think Jimmy Kimmel has, too.
But, yeah, Jimmy Kimmel's on, so he's talking about the members of the team. Of course, Liz does not like the spotlight, so she's not happy about this.
She's a Conan fan.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So Liz is in the bathroom, and she's taking
Can I say this is a good scene for Ron Perlman, just the funness of it. Like, yeah. I can see how his character is just kind of like, just having fun with it.
He really lets loose with Hellboy. I like it. And it's different, because a lot of times he has to be the gruff, like, complete asshole, and he gets to actually be kind of fun in these. So I enjoy him in this. But
if you've ever heard interviews with him or seen like stuff where it's just Ron Perlman being Ron Perlman, he is Hellboy. I mean, the way that the jovial sort of mischievous personality that Hellboy has in this is so just who Ron Perlman is.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
That's cool.
He gets to unleash his inner Ron Perlman. It'd be even better if he turned back from the monster, you know, into a human during. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, he's just basically himself in makeup in this, which is so wonderful, as opposed to some of the he has a face where he gets struck with a lot of these makeup roles. I mean, it goes as far back as, and we kind of skipped over it, but the guy who plays the king, Prince Nuada's father, is actually the father of Ron Perlman's character in that Beauty and the Beast TV series.
Oh, is he? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, same actor.
I barely remember that show from back in the day. I was so young when it was on.
I don't know. It was on CBS. We didn't watch CBS.
Yeah. And so
I used to watch it with my mom. The whole romance angle thing appealed to her.
Soap opera kind of romance-y.
Yeah, whereas the underground dwelling separate society and monster was all I could ever watch. So.
Was he good in that? Was he good in that show?
Oh, yeah.
What, Ron Perlman?
Yeah.
As far as I can recall, yeah. Now, if you try to watch it again, it's super melodramatic and very much a soap opera, but he owned that role. I mean, he acted behind layers of makeup, and that's the thing that he does so well, is he brings character depth and emotional gravity to these creatures that are so much makeup that you can barely even move his face. But the way that he holds himself, and that's one of the things that Del Toro does really well, is picks actors who are so expressive with just the way that they hold themselves, and then everything else falls into place.
Real quick, who was the woman that was in that, in Beauty and the Beast?
Linda Hamilton,
yeah.
That was Linda Hamilton. When she wasn't fighting Terminator, she was hanging out with Vincent.
She needed more makeup in Beauty and the Beast.
Fun fact, I thought she was the Beast.
Aww.
Don't defend her, Linda Hamilton. Don't defend her.
I happen to like Linda Hamilton, but we'll move on.
our apologies to Linda Hamilton. We apologize. As does...
Sorry, I think we're more Scott Hamilton fans, if you know what I mean.
Fair enough.
See, like, I love that he watched Beauty and the Beast with his mom. I just watched Magnum P.I. with my mom, which explains a lot.
Yeah.
But the...
Magnum P.I. was one that she would watch that I would just go do something else, so...
I know. I was enthralled.
I think Jeremy like probably did, too.
We were playing with different toys then, I guess.
Anywho.
What are we talking about? What movie are
we... So, Magnum
Hellboy
P. 2
Golden Army.
Yes, oh, yeah. Thank you. So, Manning, Hellboy's watching himself on TV. Manning comes in and tells him, you know, I hope you're happy. We're going to get a new agent that comes in, and he's going to be here to handle you to make sure there's no more of these slip-ups. So... we flash back to Nuada, who now gets before the one-armed king. So he is there, and he's basically talking to him about, to King Baylor, about, you know, the humans have taken over this war, this world. They've broken the truce. It's our time to wage war on them. And the king says, no, you know, we will uphold our end of the truce, even if they don't. He's like, and humans can't help it. It's in their nature. And so Nuada says, you know what, you know, I'm going to go get the, give me the crown pieces. I'm going to unleash the Golden Army.
Mm-hmm.
And the king basically says, you know, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to put you to death because I can't let you do that. And he says, well, you know, do you feel that way too, sister? And she kind of agrees. And he goes, fine then. So then he manages to get some swords away from the other, like from the soldiers. Or from the guards in the courtroom. So he manages to get these the swords away from them, fights his way there. Again, Luke Goss is amazing.
Yeah, he really is.
So he fights his way over there, and he manages to stab the king in the chest. And he, of course, like turns into like ivory or some sort of like stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool that he turns into this. And then Nuada grabs the crown piece, so now he has the other one, so he has two of them, and tells...
I also like the fact that they turned to stone as a way to prove that the reason we don't know a lot of these creatures exist is we just think they're statue carvings that came from our imagination. We find them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it's a great explanation of that. And
Which makes the auction house that much more grim, because what if that is the carcasses of some of these other supernatural beings that would turn into that.
Ooh, that's when true. They die. I didn't think about that.
Very Get Out, right?
Yeah.
Like that movie Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Good eye, Gord.
Spoiler, by the way.
Yeah. And
what, that they all turn to stone when they die in Get Out? Yeah,
no,
that's a total
I mean
spoiler.
In the movie Get Out.
Total spoilers. They are gnomes. So... Nuada basically says, hey, you know, sister, I want that third piece. And when he turns around to find her, she's gone. So she's managed to escape. But this is the first time we see where his nose is bleeding, her nose is bleeding. So we know there's some sort of connection between them. And we'll find out more about that later. But in the meantime, we go back to the BPRD, where all of them are standing around and waiting for the agent.
Can I say she looked like albino Clarissa Flockhart to me in a way?
She kind of did.
Yeah.
Yeah, which most of us just call Calista Flockhart, but...
Did I say Floresta?
Yeah, Floresta.
Okay, whatever. Yeah. It's not the first name I screwed up.
No, I think I said that.
Okay.
The Anyway, so they're waiting around... Johann Kraus shows up, and so this is another character from the comics, who's voiced by Seth MacFarlane, basically doing his...
and Kraus. Not over the top and cheesy like you would expect him to do either.
No.
Seth MacFarlane shows up in things that you're like, whoa, it's Seth MacFarlane, and you're like, well, that's crazy.
Yeah. He, and this is another one of those where it's he does a very good job with it, and
yeah,
I think he
fun.
Took it seriously. I think that's part of it, is he was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes in, and he's like in this, almost like this diving suit with like a glass bowl head piece on it. And we realize he is an expert in ectoplasmics. So he basically is kind of like a ghost or like an ectoplasm that inhabits this suit.
Mm-hmm.
And Hellboy just doesn't like him because he's German. And being that he was found in World War II and summoned by the Germans, he is not a big German fan. So,
he was also raised by people who hated the Germans and had to fight them in World War II. So exactly. That bigotry is going to be handed down.
Right.
Yep,
all exactly. The things he experienced as Hellboy when he grows up to a grown-up version of himself, stick with him. The Babe Ruths, the fact that he loves cats, his love of pancakes, the way that he even talks, like you hear it later on in the film when he refers to the army, he mispronounces the word indestructible and says industrable, but he's very tied to that childhood and how he was raised. So that's why he has this like unfettered hatred for Germans, just for no reason other than that's just what he remembers as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. So Strauss wants to, Johann Strauss wants to get to, or Krauss wants to get to work right away. So he's going to use what he calls teleplasty, which is where he controls something using like that ectoplasm to control one of the dead tooth fairies that they found. So it comes back to life and gives them some info, which basically leads them to the troll market. But everyone quickly dismisses that, saying, well, that's just a myth. That's not a real thing. And, of course, the tooth fairy coughs up the ectoplasm and just is dead again. So they kind of theorize where it might be, and they localize it to where they think it's under the Brooklyn Bridge. So they all head there. They've never been able to find it before, but Krauss gives them the special glasses to be able to see things as they really are.
But those things are really cool. I love the practical effect of those things.
Yes. Yeah, I do too.
They're based on a folklore mythology of a creator who, very similarly to what they show there, where you know to break through fairy glamour and stuff like that. And actually, I think it's the Spiderwick Chronicles used a very similar idea or that same mythology. So it's very rooted in that.
Yep.
I break through fairy glamour all the time.
He uses the lenses, and of course, as they're doing it, we get some interesting things. Like, they're supposed to show things as they really are. While they're talking, Abe uses them, and he sees Hellboy, again with, like, the little flaming crown on his head and his full demon horns. Mm. Instead of having them, they're like that, they're flat because he basically grinds them down.
Mm-hmm.
So he can look as close to human as possible.
Okay.
And so Abe sees him as he really is, or his true form, like through those glasses. So
it's pretty cool.
And then they see a little old lady, and they say, well, we're tracking her. And they say, well, it's a Fraggle Womp. And of course, then Manning.
In which I was like, isn't that Wembley? Isn't that Wembley from Fraggle Rock?
Yeah, he's the Fraggle Womp.
Okay, yeah.
So Fraggle Womp is a Scottish troll who eats cats.
Oh, so Wembley.
And is afraid of canaries. So exactly like Wembley. So Manning
Gobo?
Is looking
Gobo?
Through
Maybe
the...
Gobo?
What's that?
Did Gobo? Maybe Gobo?
Maybe
or
Gobo?
Which
yeah.
one had the Hawaiian shirt?
Oh, God.
Yeah, whatever.
I think that was Wembley.
I think that was Wembley. That I think Wembley. Wembley had the Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah. The Nick Nolte of
the Nick
the
Nolte of the Fraggles.
So the Fraggle Womp is getting ready to eat a cat. And Hellboy's like, I can't let her do that. And Krauss is like, get down, Agent Hellboy. You know, you can't get out there. We gotta watch, we gotta observe. He's like, she's gonna eat the cat. And of course he has this love for cats, so he's not gonna let it happen. He gets out there and says no, and she's like, oh hi, and tries to do this like sweet little old lady thing, and he goes, I can see you for what you really are with these.
Mm-hmm.
So give it up, lady. And so he gets her, they bust out the canary, which she's afraid of, and get her to take them to the entrance to the troll market. Of course, when they get there, she won't let them in. He can no longer brute force it or threaten her into it. So he finally just punches her across the room. And, of course, Krauss is pissed, but he says, he'll get the door open for them. So he goes into his ectoplasmic state and controls the door and makes it open. So now we are in the troll market.
And the troll market is so cool, a.k.a. the troll market is also known as Facebook or Twitter, correct?
Yeah, it's the live market on Facebook is the troll market.
No, but like
this is something that Del Toro absolutely loves. He actually reused this in the Trolls TV series that he did for Netflix.
Okay.
It's literally the troll market in both of them.
Oh, wow.
And it's like it's just this world where supernatural beings can all congregate. But in the TV series that he did, Troll Hunter, I think, was a TV series that he did. But
yeah,
the troll market in that is specifically and only trolls. But there's so many different types of breeds of trolls. And the way that they look is very, very different. So it's almost the same place. And it's beautiful.
I'm telling you, I could have spent another hour in the troll market alone just because there was so much going on and so much visual. It was just eye candy, like everywhere.
When we saw this in theaters, I leaned over to Jeremy and said, I want to live there.
Right. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's this beautiful mix of practical effects. Mm-hmm. And some light CGI. Mm-hmm. It's practical, which is just amazing.
It's just amazing
to me because our knee-jerk reaction is just to go all digital.
It's like taking the scene in Star Wars, the canteen scene, and like just a market and like just blowing it up even bigger.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And just, oh, it's so great.
Yeah, but he has this great emphasis on practical effects, which I love.
Yeah, absolutely. He only augments practical with CG when he has to.
Yeah.
You can tell that.
Oh, yeah. So now Abe, as they're all splitting up and looking around, Abe spots Nuala and thinks, he goes, oh, is that the royal seal? And starts following her based off of their previous discovery of the royal seal on those boxes. In the meantime, Krauss is trying to talk to some creatures, but nobody wants to really talk to him. He goes up and he says, oh, have you seen this? And shows them something. They say to go away. He shows them the royal seal, and now they're really angry, and they're coming after him. Hellboy steps in, throws one of them in some boiling water, and then the other one just keeps slapping around until they tell him, and they say Prince Nuada is basically going to start a war with the humans, and he's trying to get the pieces to start the Golden Army up. And, of course, later they apologize to the baby that the person is holding. Turns out it's a talking tumor, which is odd and interesting.
The most adorable tumor you will ever see.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of.
Yeah, who also trash talks a little bit, which is adorable as well.
Yeah.
So, meantime, Abe makes his way to, or Abe is still following Nuala. She goes into this map maker shop, and she's given a map or this like tube with a map in it.
Mm-hmm.
By this guy who has like a castle for a head, which is a very interesting effect.
That totally does look like Mirror Mask. There's a lot of creatures in Mirror Mask.
There's a lot of that I just kind of was like, wow. But even Mirror Mask, when I watched that, I just was like, oh, let me take all this in. So there's a lot of this that I didn't write down because I was just so fascinated by everything.
Yeah, it was
in this.
Yeah, it was. And because usually we're both taking notes.
I'm taking a lot of notes, but like
Bradley, we get done with the troll market later and Bradley goes, oh, man, I didn't write anything down. He's like, I was just so focused on like the visuals.
It's because you turn right, there's something. You turn left, there's something. I mean, it's so great.
Yeah, every time I see something a little weird and different in the background.
Yeah.
So I love it. But so Castlehead gives Nuala the container with the map in it and says, you know, the coordinates are here to find the Golden Army. Everything you need is here. And so then Abe comes in behind her and says, oh, yeah, I'm looking for a map. And just kind of like trying to play it cool and like not know that, you know, he's following her. And she threatens him. And they start talking with each other and learning that, you know, they start learning from one another and finding out that, you know, they both have the psychometry. They both, you know, are on the same side. They're both working for the good guys. So then, let's see here. Right after that, Mr. Wink shows up. And he smashes Abe right through a wall. Of course, Wink comes back to finish the job, and he lifts his gauntlet up or his metal hand, and before he can do anything, Hellboy shoots him in the hand a couple times. Of course, it doesn't hurt it, but, you know, at least gets him stopped. And, of course, Hellboy's like, hey, Abe, you know, take the girl, run, and then Wink and Hellboy start fighting. So they're pretty evenly matched in this fight.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's a pretty good brawl. Mixed with, like, your classic, like, Hellboy, Ron Perlman kind of humor about it. You know, just acting like the badass on everything. So at one point, they punch each other hard, and they both use their artificial hands, or their, one uses the stone fist, one uses the metal fist. And, of course, it smashes the metal hand to pieces. But Hellboy kind of turns around, pulls out a tooth, and while he's doing that, Wink gets up behind him. Hellboy says, hey, you know, I wouldn't do that, because he's getting ready to shoot him with that fist. Wink shoots his hand off, and it gets stuck in this wall with, like, these spiky rollers on it that you see people dumping garbage into earlier. I think it's like a waste disposal furnace thing. And basically, and it's a really cool effect. So you see Wink basically getting pulled in and just ground to mush. And you can see at the bottom of the rollers, just like meat falling, like smushed meat. And then, some parts of it fall on this side of the
education.
Yeah. some of it falls on this side of the rollers and everything. So it's a pretty cool effect. So, some creatures see this, and they run to tell Prince Nuada, who looks super pissed about this, of course.
It's probably been his only friend during all of those centuries that he was exiled as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so, yeah, they're extremely close, obviously.
I don't know.
It's his right-hand man.
His hair, I mean, that's a friend in itself. It's so beautiful and long.
His luxurious white hair.
His luxurious hair.
So, back at the entrance to the market, they tell the princess, hey, give us the last piece, we'll take care of it. And she says, no, I'm not giving this up. My father died trying to protect his. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let this go. And so, she says she won't give it up. Abe vouches for her and says, well, we'll take her with us. They get ready to leave, and Nuada stops them. So, Nuada pulls out, Prince Nuada pulls out this thing. It's like a golden egg, and it opens. And of course, everybody's just like, what? Except for Nuala, who's freaking out. It opens, and it's like a bean embryo thing that's inside of it. And of course, they just kind of laugh it off, but it starts, he tells it to kill them, and it starts hopping around.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a jumping bean.
Yeah. And she goes, stop it. Don't let it get to water. Yeah. Well, it gets to water, and it starts growing. So now we have this giant plant creature that busts up from under the ground, and Nuala tells them that it's an elemental forest god. So Hellboy says, a forest god? I'm going to go get Big Baby. And so he pulls out the Big Baby. So for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a giant gun with giant, like, shotgun cartridges that goes into it. It's a really cool-looking weapon. You think so, Court? Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely badass. It's a definite upgrade from his normal oversized revolver.
And I love the oversized revolver, but Big Baby is pretty sweet. And he has to, like, wind it up to
yeah,
fire.
It's clockwork, which is what Guillermo del Toro loves, and he has to wind it up to be able to fire it, and the thing is so big that even he has to hold it with two hands almost.
Yeah. And so while they're getting over there to fight the elemental, a lady is trying to get to her baby, which she somehow has locked in her car. And so Hellboy's like, hey, I'll help. And, of course, she recoils in terror when she sees him. But he gets the baby out and is trying to get it to safety as the elemental's coming after them. So he's running with this baby. And trying to get away from the elemental at the same time. He climbs the sign while the elemental's trying to attack them.
So at one time he had a baby in each hand. I mean,
yes,
think about it.
He had a big baby in each hand.
Yeah, there you go.
And so he he needs to get Big Baby ready. So he says, oh, trust me on this kid, and throws the baby in the air, winds up the gun, and then catches the baby again and shoots the elemental twice, like one in each shoulder. And of course, its blood, when it comes out, makes just like grass and plants spring up from wherever it lands, which I loved. I thought that was a great effect. And then Krauss,
they stated too, whenever the elemental was being built, Nuada's sister Nuala says that it's a creature of both life-giving and destruction.
That's true.
So it creates and it destroys. And so I think whenever it gets harmed, that's why its blood becomes moss and then eventually grows flowers and all other things.
Yeah. Oh, it is. I loved it. I mean, what a. And this, the whole scene was great because there's like a whole like kind of duality or like just kind of conflicting stuff with this. So Hellboy's getting ready to shoot the elemental again, and Krauss is yelling at him to shoot it in the head, and Hellboy kind of hesitates. Nuada shows up on the top of the building that he's by and says, "You know what? This is the last of its kind. You know, you're closer to us than you are to them. They're not going to accept you. You know, we could clear this world of humans together. You know, why won't you should help us? Think about what side you're on."
Does Hellboy always have that kind of backstory? Not the backstory, but like the inner dialogue of like belonging. Like all these people kind of want to belong.
Yeah, I think
that's more in the movies than the comics.
Okay.
Yeah, in the comics, it's more like established that he's out in the world.
Right, like what Court said.
Yeah. But I think there is some of it too, just not so much well, of, like it is with this. So
there's stuff in the comics where he feels unappreciated, where he basically turned his back on his own kind to save humanity. And there's stuff where he will lament that here and there. And he's always constantly talking about how no one appreciates the work that he does. Like, he does bellyache in the comics like that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just double-checked. There was a Golden Army comic book, but it was based off of the movie. So this is a separate story that they turned into a comic book later that Magnolia and Guillermo del Toro wrote together.
Nice. That's very cool. I got to check it out now. Pick it up, folks. Comic books. Enjoy them. So Hellboy is struggling with whether or not to shoot this thing. The creature, who, after it was bleeding, it kind of gets bound to the building with some vines, finally breaks free and comes at him again. And so Hellboy shoots the thing in the head. And so it falls back and dies, and just wherever its blood goes, everything starts springing up. It's a very, like, kind of serene-looking, you know, things overtaking, the plants are overtaking the humans, like cars and buildings and stuff. Mm-hmm. Very serene shot. Hellboy brings the baby to the lady who was looking for it earlier. And of course, he's been taking great care of it, takes the baby to her, and she grabs it and is like, "What did you do to my baby?" And it's freaking out at him. And people are yelling at him and calling him freaks and accusing him of doing something to the baby. The police draw their guns on him and tell him to stay back.
This is where, like, the movie kind of loses me a little bit in that aspect. Well, mainly because of, like, almost what Court is saying, how they are out in the comic book.
Yeah.
And I felt like this was just to put into the movie. And I felt like, I just kind of want to move the plot along.
Yeah, it was just to heighten the sense of the us versus them and which side do you choose bit.
But I feel like we're already there. In a way.
Well, there's that, and the whole another thing that Del Toro really loves to do is the persecuted creatures who are actually the good guys, and then, you know, how humanity is really the monster. It goes back to his love of universal monsters as well. You know, the whole Frankenstein's monster really is more of a victim than what people realize, you know, when they watch the film. And yeah, it goes a little bit over the top with this, but it's also very important to note that he's told by Nuada right before he kills the monster or the elemental creature that this is the last of its kind and it will never be seen on Earth again. Its like will never exist again if he kills it. And it's one of the things that they're kind of, I think the struggle isn't so much that the people hate Hellboy and are attacking him, it just illustrates what he's doing that much more, to where he's getting rid of these creatures that will no longer exist, and he's doing it for these people that are completely ungrateful and are selfish, which is all of humanity.
Right.
And at the same time, he has to come to terms with he's one of them. So where does he fit in to this world?
Right.
Because he's not a supernatural creature, but he's even kind of beyond even them, because he's actually meant to destroy all of it.
And right. So, yeah. Which is what Jeremy said to me at the end of the movie, because I asked him about that. Because there's a scene that they talk about that. I guess for me, it just was kind of just over dramatic about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it just, you know, I get like what they're doing, but I think the execution was maybe a little, you know.
Del Toro puts a little bit of melodrama in his stuff, but it works for me when it comes to creatures.
Sure. But to Court's point too, where he even's like, you know, I'm gonna snuff this light out in the world.
Right.
But what for? That it's echoed actually in the next scene, where they're at the BPRD again, and Hellboy's actually talking to Liz, where you know, he says, I had to kill this thing and they still hate me. Why? Why am I doing this?
But I think that plays better than, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But keep going.
And then Liz, you know, of course, she's saying, you know, you got to give him time. And, you know, and basically she says at this point that she needs to get out and needs time to think for herself for a bit anyway. And so she basically goes to somewhere else and just thinks. While that's happening, then we start... Nuala is reading in their library, and Abe is coming to kind of meet with her, and we learn that Nuada and Nuala have a telepathic link, and so they're kind of learning about each other, and you know, kind of you can see they're kind of falling for each other, but she says that Nuada's gonna find me because I know where we are, so he'll know where we are. And they said, "Nah, don't worry about it. We're protected." And she's like, "Well, you know, he's pretty badass. So, he's my brother. He's badass.
He's my brother."
So in the meantime, Hellboy is feeling depressed. So he does what most of us do, which is drink in the shower.
I thought it was eat ice cream, but yeah, you're right. Drink in the shower.
Eat ice cream in the shower if that's what you need.
Just make sure you do it in the shower. Yeah, whatever it is,
Whatever it is in the shower has to happen.
Yeah.
So Johan shows up and, he basically tells Hellboy, look, you know what your problem is? You have one weakness, and he won't tell him what it is. You don't want to hear it. And
is
Hellboy
it Linda
says,
Hamilton?
Yes, it's Linda Hamilton. And so he says, you have one weakness, and he won't tell Hellboy, and Hellboy loses his temper and says, well, what is it? Just tell me. And he goes, it's your temper. So of course he gets pissed and he punches Kraus in the glass dome of his containment suit, and which breaks it, and then you see it kind of like it looks like he's sputtering and dying and falls over, and of course Hellboy's like, oh damn, like what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
But we see the ectoplasm goes up into the lockers.
Yeah.
And he basically kicks Hellboy's butt with the locker doors.
Total Del Toro moment here too. It's so comical and humorous, and Perlman plays it perfectly.
Yeah, and then you know one thing I liked. So there's the very last door that hits him hard enough that it makes like the impression of his face.
Yeah, I like that. That was pretty funny.
But it was like, it would have annoyed me if they sat on it more. Like if they were like whoa and like focused on that.
Well, that would be too.
But
cartoon.
You just see it and it closes again right away. So it's just a brief thing. So I was like, you know what? I'll take it. I like that. So it's very funny. So then we see Kraus outside of his containment suit. We see his ectoplasmic form just strutting away, singing. And so Hellboy, now who's been beat up and just depressed, he is walking by and he hears what sounds like love songs. So he goes into the library. And Abe is in there, and he's listening to classical music. And he's like, what are you listening to? Oh, you know, just this classical stuff. And he goes, no, what were you really listening to? And he finds it's love songs, and are like the top love songs. And so they start getting drunk and singing together.
This sequence is the one that I totally fell in love with the movie for.
Yeah.
As soon as he walks in there and he's already been drinking and him and Abe sort of bond over Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
My heart just sang. I was so happy. For a monster kid, this is exactly what you want to see. Where you're just basically being, I'm calling myself a monster kid.
Yeah.
But like that's what you want in your monster movies, is these monsters just being themselves and just being a human being.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
Or a living being.
Yeah.
I love that.
The fact that
especially like
The fact that they're Fanalos is amazing.
Well, and I mean, Hellboy at first is like trying to pretend like he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they end up, as they're getting drunk, they end up singing along to it, and then they're bonding over to Takeda and Barry Manilow.
That's how you should listen to Barry Manilow anyway. That's how you listen to Barry Manilow drunk. You do not listen to him
drinking Takates with somebody else. Yeah,
it's the only way. Got the Copacabana.
Give me another one.
Then we have this.
I love in that scene too where Abe says that he can't drink, his body as a temple, and Hellboy shoves a beer at him and says, "Now it's an amusement park."
Yeah.
It's like my favorite line in the movie.
And he's like, where Abe's like, "Well, I can't smile because he has a fish mouth thing." He's like, "I can't smile. I don't even think I can cry. I don't even know if I have tear ducts, but like, I understand what this song now. I get it now." And so, like, it's just this very sweet
moment.
Really
like Abe in this movie.
Yeah. I like him much more than the first one.
Yeah, it actually shouldn't be called Hellboy 2 The Golden Army. It should be Hellboy 2 Fall in Love with Abe Sapien. Because that's what the movie makes you do.
Oh, well, my God.
Abe Sapien actually has his own spin-off comic.
Mm-hmm.
He's the star of, which has been around for a long time. It was very popular. Anyway, so we see Nuala senses Prince Nuada is coming, so she hides the crown piece. We then come back to Abe and Hellboy, who at this point are really just stinking drunk, and they're over like looking at Liz while she sleeps, talking about women and love, and you know, Hellboy laments, "Oh, I would die for her, but she wants me to do the dishes." And of course Abe's like, I would die and do the dishes, and they're just, you know, being obnoxious at this point. And
that's
like
a pretty typical guy thing too, where he's like, "I would die for the woman I love, but I can't do the dishes."
Yeah, right. And so he's like, "Something's bothering her." And Hellboy says, "Something's bothering her." Abe goes, "Just ask." "No, I can't do that. She'll get mad." And he goes, "All right, I'll tell you what it is." Like right as Liz is waking up, so she stops him because he's about to spill the beans. And about that time, Nuala pushes the emergency button because Nuada has actually come in and is going through all the books where she hid them, trying to find where they are. And so, she pushes the emergency button. They all bust in. Hellboy steps up to fight and, of course, drunkenly stumbles down the steps. And Abe tells him, "You can't hurt Nuada or it'll hurt the princess, too, due to their link." So he's like, "Well, what the hell am I supposed to do?" So he's fighting him, but trying not to hurt Nuada when he's doing it. About that time, Liz shows up and Hellboy turns to talk to her. And when he turns, she says, "Look out." When he turns around, Nuada stabs him with the spear he has and snaps off the tip. And there's this cool shot like where the tip just grows back on his spear, but the other end of it is still in Hellboy. And so Hellboy drops and he says, "Bring me the piece so nobody else has to get hurt. So I'm going to take the princess and be out of here." So he takes her away, and Hellboy, the next thing he's in the infirmary, and every time they try to get the spear piece out, it gets closer and closer to his heart.
Mm.
And so he's slowly, it's just like slowly going to kill him. So Liz.
And because it's a magical weapon, it gets past the fact that he is a supernatural creature. And that's when he says before he stabs him, like, "Are you mortal? Well, you're about to find out because now you are."
Yeah.
Or something like that. "Or now you're mortal," I believe.
Yeah.
Which is how every fight should end.
Yeah.
you know,
decrying somebody's mortality. Right. Correct. So, Liz is basically, they say, we know where the piece is. We just take the piece to him. We can save Hellboy's life. We just have to go after him and get him to stop this. And of course, Manning and Krauss, they say, well, no, we're not going to. We can't use the resources. We have to try to find to stop the Golden Army. We can't risk him unleashing this on the world. And, of course, Abe has found the piece in the book, and he kind of tucks it away when he hears what's going on so that they don't know he has it.
Right.
Liz says she's going to do something, and she basically accuses Krauss of losing his humanity, which prompts him to look at this like little pouch he has, and you don't quite know the story yet, but something's going on. So Abe goes to Liz and says, hey, look, let's just go. So they plan to leave, and as they're sneaking away, Johann Krauss shows up, and he says, believe it or not, like, once upon a time I was actually married, which is, you know, I won't go into the story, but suffice it to say it's kind of how I ended up in this ectoplasmic state. But I know what love is, and I'm not...
I want you to show yes, me.
Exactly. It was all set up for the musical number. But he says, look, I was in love. I haven't lost my humanity. Let's go do this. And so they steal a plane, and they fly to Northern Ireland, where the map told them to go. So they're heading towards where this entrance is, and they run across... I think it's like goblin who says he will give them passage to find the Golden Army into the city if he gives them something. So they both basically bargain, and he says, well, I want the shiny spear fragment. And they're like, fine, if you can help him, we'll get you the spear fragment.
And didn't we find out the guy that plays Krauss is the same guy that plays this guy?
Yes, yeah, so Krauss... He's voiced by Seth MacFarlane,
right,
but his body work is done by a different person. But that same guy is the one who actually plays and voices the goblin. So they gave him something else to do. Much like Doug Jones, he's doing double duty in this. So they agree to give the goblin the spear tip, and so they head down into this dead city. The Goblin City, where they had where the Golden Army was first created and basically stashed, and they locked it up later, and so everybody who was inside of it was locked away from the world, so they just kind of died.
Much like Counts of Bluffs.
Correct. So, as they're going, they come to somebody who can help. It's actually Death. So, and here's another. Perfect.
It's not just Death, though. It's a specific Death. It's an angel of death specifically for Hellboy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's Hellboy's Death. And it actually, it shows later that there's, you know, it has like his life charted out on the
this
floor.
This thing looks amazing, too.
Like, it's I'm classic just Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, God.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, this is
probably one of the creatures that Del Toro has been working on and sketching for like ever.
Oh,
and just
amazing.
Came up with this excuse to bring it into the movie just to show his glorious creature work, you know.
Does he like to put eyeballs just in not faces, but like in every other part, like on the hand and on the just eyeballs everywhere on this thing?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So cool.
And that eyeball hand creature from Pan's Labyrinth was also Doug Jones's performance.
That makes sense. It kind of feels like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He likes playing with eyes or playing where like things show up.
Yeah.
So of course it has eyes on its wings, but it doesn't have any like on its actual face. So basically Liz bargains with Death to save Hellboy. So Death says, Hellboy is going to bring about the destruction of the world. You know, would you still save him if it meant the death of everyone else? And she said, yeah, I would, because I love him. And the Death says, fine, then I will save him. But just so you know, you're going to suffer the most because you're going to know that you could have stopped all this. And so Death pulls the spear piece out, and now it's up to her to bring him back from the brink. So she basically tells him to come back and says that he's going to be a father, which draws Hellboy out. So he's back, and of course the goblin gets his little shiny piece. But from there, they head to the Golden Army. So they make it to the Golden Army, and when they get there...
The Golden Army, by the way, was the original title for the spinoff of the Golden Girls.
The Golden Army. Where it's just an army of elderly women.
Yeah. Sophia. Don't mess with Sophia.
That reminds me of the old Monty Python sketch of the old women running around taking over the city. And
yeah. Oh, my God. Yes. Now I got to watch that. So they get there. Nuada is already with the Golden Army, basically, which are in their dormant state. And... Abe shows up and gives Nuada the last piece to save the princess.
Level up.
Yeah.
Every time he grabbed one of these things, I said, level up.
Yeah, every time he put a crown piece together, Bradley would go, level up. So Nuada has the complete crown and activates the army and says, kill them. And of course, Abe is confused because he's like, what? But you said, we said it would all be fine. Nobody's going to get hurt.
Oh,
whatever.
Abe.
Yeah, poor Abe. And
maybe he had water in his ear.
Probably. Or a lack of water in his ear. Maybe that's...
He's suffering from guppy love, so he can't help
it. I'll give you that one.
Have you just been saving that one up?
No, it just literally popped into my head.
No,
so
he just thought of that.
So everybody's attacking at this point, and the team is holding their own. So, and I remember watching this and thinking, wow, this Golden Army doesn't seem that indestructible.
Right.
Yeah, that indestructible.
Yeah, like when I'm watching it, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, and so like Hellboy is shooting them and ripping them apart.
It's a pretty good scene with Hellboy. Yeah.
Yeah, and like they're getting burned, they're getting just shot and trashed, and like Krauss even possesses one of them, which is cool because the fire inside of it, instead of it being red, turns blue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see, like, he's fighting as one of them.
Yeah.
And we have the call back to the beginning when Hellboy called them industrial. And, of course, he rips one apart and he goes, industrial my ass.
Yeah, which is what Court said.
Yeah. And so they get done with it.
One of my favorite lines in the film, too.
And so he gets done with it, and they just start to self-repair. So now we know why they're indestructible and unstoppable. So they're bringing themselves back together. And they're advancing on them, and all of a sudden Hellboy kind of thinks back to the stories of that he heard at the beginning that Professor Broom told him, and he challenges Nuada, and Nuada says, well, who are you to challenge me for control of the Golden Army? And then Princess Nuala says, no, that's right. He's Amun-Ra.
Fucking Perlman.
Yeah, he's Amun-Ra. He's the prince of hell or king of hell. Like he does have that right. He's a royal. So they get to fight then. So Nuada and Hellboy fight like in a trial by combat. Hellboy, it's a really cool scene, like with kind of fighting on top of all these gears and Hellboy using a sword for a while and then his fist to deflect some of the blade. He comes around. He manages to disarm Nuada and spares him. He's not going to kill him because he knows it'll hurt Nuala. So, and again, Luke Goss, awesome. His fights are awesome in this. Like,
yeah.
I can't like give this guy enough praise for this.
This whole scene with the fight with Hellboy and him, it's so well done.
Yeah. So Hellboy gets the upper hand, but he basically says, you know, you've been defeated, but I'm not going to kill you. And he takes the crown so then he can basically stop the army. But while he's walking away, Nuada just comes at him with this blade, is going to stab him in the back. And all of a sudden he just stops in his tracks and blood just kind of like gushes out of his chest in a spurt. Well, turns out to save them, Nuala actually stabbed herself which means that Prince Nuada had a similar injury. So they're both dying at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like, she's talking about love to Abe, and they're talking about like the beauty in the world because they're sharing this like vision. In the meantime, Nuada is talking to Hellboy about, you know, why could you do this? You know, they're going to turn on you. You should destroy them. And so you have this kind of like love and hate, like beauty and destruction kind of duality in these conversations. Finally, Nuada tries to go to his sister and, of course, turns to like ivory or marble or whatever and just crumbles. And then she turns to that in Abe's arms. So Liz melts the crown so that nobody can ever control the army again. So they're stopped.
And Hellboy was tempted to use it. You do see that tinge of that power. So he still has that side to him.
That itch.
Yeah, because he, even regardless of whatever, that's, you know, he still knows what world he's going back to after this. And so the team emerges and they run into Manning. So Manning starts kind of chewing them out. And one by one, they basically say that they're quitting. Hellboy says they should get a place for the baby in the country. And Liz corrects him and says, babies, and holds up two fingers.
Deuce!
Yeah, and then it freezes and it's playing Barry Manilow again on Hellboy, who's looking stunned.
Without you.
So, you've been deuced.
You've been deuced. Booyah!
So, I love this movie. Like, I do. And you know, I think that... And there are parts of the script, like... There are parts of the script where, you know, I'm kind of like, yeah, that part could have been a little bit stronger.
Yeah, there is.
But the visuals and the heroics... And it's like, it's a superhero movie, but not really a superhero movie. Like, I there's so much about this that I love.
Mm-hmm.
That this one is a classic.
This is probably one of the better Deuce movies that we've watched so far. Agree. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
But...
It's going to be your high watermark for a while, I'm sure.
Well, no.
I don't know. We got Grease 2 coming up, Quark.
I stand by my statement in the face of that.
So that's what we thought of it.
Yeah.
But it's time to hear other people's reviews this movie. So we like to take a good and bad review and, talk about it. So this comes from Mr. Big Nose. And Mr. Big Nose, probably has a big nose, says, this was a major letdown, 4 out of 10.
Ooh.
This film is so... Yeah. This movie is so disappointing. It felt like I was watching a crude Lord of the Rings in the beginning, and then it started to turn into a crap Men in Black. I don't even know what the hell he means by that. I think that's off base. The Elf Prince is not that menacing as the lead villain. I would be more scared of a Cabbage Patch doll. What?
What?
I don't know. I don't know what he's saying. This is why we pull these out, because I'm like, what? There are a lot of good effects, and the creature makeup and designs were top-notch. But unless you have a good gripping story, then I'm afraid it counts for nothing. The storyline felt like you have seen it all before and know what is around the corner. It lacked the lightning pace of a good film. The original Hellboy is far superior to this and a lot more entertaining. If they had tried to flesh out the characters in the sequel, then to me, they have failed and introduced worse ones. Did he even watch the movie?
There's so much more fleshed out in this.
Yeah, I don't know what he means by that. I mean, I haven't seen the first one, so I can't.
He said that it didn't have the lightning pace. I'm thinking he's probably more of like a
Marvel.
No, well, maybe. But the what's the movie with Jason Statham? Oh God, like High Voltage.
Crank.
He's probably much more of a Crank fan. I'm sure
he was on Crank when he wrote that.
Yeah,
instead of watching Crank. So,
oh, that's way too eloquent to be on Crank while you're writing. I will give him that. He may be wrong. He made a beautiful landing at the wrong airport, is all I'm saying.
There you go. I like that. Like that. That's a really nice way of putting that. This person is Christian, and I don't mean like the religion, but that's their name. And they gave it.
Oh, you should have so found a review of a Christian writing about this. That would have been fun.
They gave it a 10 out of 10 and said, the second is always best. What is it about superhero movies?
X-Men 2, Spider-Man 2, Superman 2, and likely The Dark Knight, because this was written in July 2008, that the best of them are always the middle chapter, the second episode. I personally have no clue, but Hellboy 2 is not the exception. It's got better action, more heavily stylized, and expansive. It has a tone, more amazing creatures. It's got an even better script and a much better story. It's like the director was allowed to make everything he saw fit. His vision is much fuller this time around. Surprisingly, this movie rocks and was actually the first film this year that I was all around satisfied by. And I'm like, the reason why this movie didn't hit well in the box office is because The Dark Knight came close right after, I think. And so that kind of took up the conversation that year that Hellboy came out.
I don't know if you agree with that. It was a matter of months. It was just a few months later that The Dark Knight came out and everyone forgot about everything else but that.
Right.
Well, and the first time around, it's almost turnabout, though, because I think the first time around, Punisher with Thomas Jane came out, and then like 2 weeks later, Hellboy came out.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember we went and saw both of them. I think that was the order they came out.
Hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. But
that sounds about right. It's around the same year. So.
They were literally two weeks apart.
Yeah. I correct you when you're wrong all the time.
Oh, yes. Even when I'm not wrong sometimes. So at this point, we always just like to talk about what we thought about it. So we have 5 questions we like to ask. First, what do you think the best part of the movie was?
And we'll go with you, Court.
We'll throw it to you first, Court.
Well, I kind of already revealed that, but I'll reiterate. The part where Abe Sapien and Hellboy are drinking, listening to Barry Manilow. And then you guys mentioned it too, but like when they're actually in the room and Hellboy's looking over Liz, they're out of all the other beer that was probably in Hellboy's locker, and they're going to where he has some in the fridge in his room, and that's why they're there. But Hellboy being drunk and kind of trying to figure out what's going on with his relationship is watching his lady sleep, and Abe's just kind of being a drunken loud lout there. And that stuff is the best to me. I want to see that more with my creature films, where you get to see a life that they have besides just showing up and spooking people and or attacking things. So I love that, sort of like they have lives too, just like the rest of us.
Right.
And also the troll market as well.
Troll market.
And I love too the monsters that are in that. There's the one that has the tumor growing off of him. Mm-hmm. Him and the guy who was shaving him both have Jersey accents because the troll market's under the bridge.
I noticed
Jersey.
That.
Well, and one of them says, they're like, "Have you seen this?" He goes, "I don't know. Maybe go look in New Jersey." And I was like, oh, that's okay.
That's great.
We're still in New York.
That's great. My favorite is the troll market. I mean, if you're watching this movie for the first time, haven't seen Hellboy, just like me, and you run into the troll market scene, if you do not fall in love with anything in there, no, don't even like watch any other movie, because the practical effects and the special effects in that are beyond what I've seen. And it's so amazing, every corner that you go to, that's something new.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah. And it was.
And if you love the troll market, I definitely recommend checking out the Netflix series that Del Toro did, Troll Hunters, because they spend a lot of time in a world just like that in Troll Hunters.
That's pretty
it's great.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Because I wanted more of that. And so, yeah, I'll have to check it out.
So, for me, it was really hard to pick.
There's a lot of good things.
I love Guillermo del Toro stuff. I like the whole Hellboy world as is, but like, I love that they went to the troll market, like you guys said. I mean, to me, it's stunning. And I love how much he does with practical effects versus CGI.
That
CGI
angel,
is just
that
sort
angel
of back
of
it
death
up.
Was amazing too.
Yes, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
But also the performers, like all the actors who were in this. I love the performances that they gave, probably save one. I was not a big fan of Princess Nuala.
Yeah.
But, like, everybody else I loved. I loved their performances. And
I think Abe was my favorite, to tell you the truth.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was very supremely happy that Doug Jones basically got to do the actual voice and body with it. Because I think he needs to have more stuff where he's featured that's not like the neighbors on ABC or whatever the hell channel.
Was he
on.
In that?
I think he was on a background character, one of the aliens on there, really? For something. Yeah.
Okay.
He also was in, what was the name of that? Falling Skies, towards the end of that run of that series. He plays like an alien ally, and his voice is there. It's augmented a little bit to make it sound more alien, but it's totally Doug Jones. The same mannerisms and everything that you get out of him in that alien outfit. And it's all practical that they put on him.
Is that the Noah Wiley show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking
you can
of
also
alien.
See him. He's actually featured no makeup at all. Just like his face with like a little bit of like the pancake makeup to make him look more pale. But very prominently in John Dies at the End. He's a being like an alien being that shows up and interacts with David Wong quite a bit.
It's true. I've never seen a picture of Doug Jones without makeup. It's kind of like
he's a very odd looking and striking man, but not like in a bad way.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you see him and you're just like, it's almost like he's almost like a fantastical being just as himself without any makeup on.
Because
when
I first heard of Ron Perlman, all I remember of Ron Perlman was always these roles where he was covered in makeup and had like, you know, Beauty and the Beast and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then when I finally saw him, I was like, oh, that's Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll show you some stuff.
Yeah.
I also, our friend Alex actually got me an autograph from Doug Jones. He said he was a super nice guy.
Oh, I bet.
I look forward. I hope he's at something someday where I can go meet him.
Yeah, I would totally meet him.
All right, second question here. Reboot, continue, or cancel?
Well, from what I heard, they're going to reboot this, correct?
Is it I thought it was a continuation.
Or is it continuation?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a reboot. They're doing an R-rated version, so it's going to be closer to the comics, quote-unquote.
Good. This movie would have been better if it was R-rated.
Yeah.
I wanted more punch to it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a curse of the time frame that it came out in.
Deadpool.
And with Deadpool hitting and then with Logan hitting and being good films in that R-rated version and having a more grown-up audience, I think it's a right time to do the reboot the way that they're doing it. I'm sad that it won't involve Ron Perlman and Guillermo del Toro, but if Magnolia's in charge, it's his original source material.
Stranger Things, right? Is going to play
David
Harbour.
Yeah. And if you look at pictures of him right next to Ron Perlman, both out in makeup, the jawline is very similar.
Yeah.
And he's not a bad actor. I think he could kind of pull it off, but he doesn't have the same kind of swagger. He's going to have to work a lot harder than what Ron Perlman
He has felt. That gruff and heart. I mean, through Stranger Things, you hate him at the beginning, and then you start, you just fall in love with that character. So,
yeah,
maybe.
I would have loved to have seen a continuation, personally. I've been begging for it ever since Hellboy 2 ended. I want to see what they're like not having to work for the BPRD, but
yeah,
I'll
true.
Take a reboot. I'll take Hellboy in any form I can get it.
Well, back in February, Guillermo del Toro said that he was telling people it's absolutely not going to have a Hellboy 3. It's absolutely not going to happen. And then we get the reboot coming up here.
I say continue. I mean, continue.
Yeah, I would continue it too. Yeah.
We're all in consensus.
Yeah, reboot it or continue it. Just don't cancel it.
Right. I want to know more. In fact, I won't. I mean, the next question I'm going to answer.
In the next couple.
The next couple. I would watch the first one again. But
you jumped the gun.
Yeah, I jumped the gun. Court,
does this make you want to watch the first one?
Watch the original Hellboy again?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I prefer to watch them back to back when I can, but usually if I'm going to get to watch one of them, I'll jump right to the second one, actually.
Really? Why the second one and not the first one?
The second one is just a more open world, and it feels more like the actual Hellboy stories that you read, because the comics, he's already out. There's so much more creatures. I mean, the troll market and the two of them hanging out and getting drunk together just grabs me so much more than anything that happens really in the first one.
Okay.
I mean, I like the Seeds of Destruction story, but it just feels too much like a real homogenized Hollywood version, whereas this one, Del Toro and Magnolia had a little more power to pull more of the stuff in that they wanted to do.
Okay.
So it's just, for me, it feels more
but
comics and
you
enjoyable.
You suggest that I go back and watch it, though.
Yeah, you should definitely go back and watch the first one. I would actually give yourself a little bit of space and then watch them both back to back, because that's really enjoyable.
Usually I like to watch it front to my TV and not my back to the TV, but hey, whatever.
No, you guys should sit back to back with your 80s pose.
And just one of us describe the movie to the other one. Or...
Like Charlie's Angels.
You sit on your couch back to back with your heads turned to face the TV and then watch both movies.
Oh, that, yeah. Why not? Sure.
Not uncomfortable at all.
Yeah.
You have to suffer for your art, guys.
That's what we watched Gone with the Wind.
I guess and it totally makes me want to watch the first one. I guess in the words of Nicolas Cage from Ghost Rider 2, yeah. Hell yeah.
Hellboy, yeah.
Yes, Hellboy, yeah. I wish that was his catchphrase. Not really. But it makes me want to watch this. But it's, Court, this is one of the, and we've talked about this, one drawback about, like, how we do this podcast, too, is that if we show a second movie, and maybe it's not as good as the first, it's tough for us to then go back and justify, well, yeah, I want to go back and see the first one.
See, I disagree with you, though. I think it could justify you to
it
go
could.
In different ways.
Oh, do you want to see Ghost Rider 1?
No.
See, there you go.
That's not a very good example, because there's fragments of both Ghost Rider movies that are good.
That's what I said.
And you could make a really decent supercut of them and have some really cool, like highlight reel of Ghost Rider, but they're not good movies.
No. They're not. But like, I think there's good parts. If, like you said, that you could take both those, put them together and make something good. But, okay. So let's,
we skipped around on that.
Yeah, we did. Do you think this movie stands on its own?
Yeah, it does.
You think so?
Yeah.
And yours is, we'll get to Court here, but I was more interested in your response to this because you haven't seen the first one.
And I made sure you didn't give me any exposition to Hellboy. I just kind of wanted to go into it. And you did a little bit with Ghost Rider when we did Ghost Rider. I did ask questions when we were watching it. I think it does. I think it does for the fact of the troll market itself. You know, I realize that's probably not in the first movie, like you guys said, but I think watching that alone, I would watch an hour of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it stands on its own. I think the effects itself make it stand on its own. What I mean?
Yeah. What do you think, Court?
Oh, you could definitely watch this on its own. I mean, it gives you enough of the origin story of Hellboy that you don't really need in the first one, and it goes running with it. It gives you enough of a flashback to develop what's going on with the Golden Army.
Yeah.
And totally stands on its own.
You know, and part of it too is, because sometimes you're like, wait, what's going on? Who are these characters? It's almost like that with the Hellboy comic, though. Like, there's a world where they just exist. And it's not necessarily like a let's round up the team origin story. You know, it's a you're just supposed to kind of accept that this is the world and this is the reality of it. And I think that if you just watch the second one, you almost get that feeling a little bit where it's like you just start out are supposed to know who they are.
Yeah, I just went with it.
And that guy's really a human in a fish. World where the son of the king of hell is sent to, you know, is dragged to Earth by Nazis. And then becomes on the side of the Axis power, or, you know, goes away from the side of the Axis power and comes to the side of, you know, the good guys because he fed him pancakes and he won't destroy the world because he loves us for pancakes. You know, I mean, you just have to accept that as like this weird stuff is the new normal. So a spectral being that is all ectoplasmic gases living inside of a modified diving suit. Sure, why not? I'll buy that. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the main character's the son of the king of hell. So, sure, let's go for it.
Yeah, works for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does, too. Yeah. Stands on its own.
All right, so.
It sits on its own, too.
Ooh. Yeah. So, Court, we'll toss this one to you first. Can you sum up your experience with this movie in two words?
Simply delightful.
Oh. Simply delightful. I will accept it. Bradley, how about you?
Hellishly wonderful.
Oh. And I just said, one of my words is hyphenated.
So no, come on.
I just put non-superheroes.
Why?
Because they're not superheroes. But they're still so heroic. Okay. And I love that. Like, I love that these are the people saving us. But they're not supposed to be like, it's Hellboy, and he swoops in with a cape and shit like that. It's like, it's like any kind of, like, if the movie, like, if somebody from the CIA or special ops thing came in, it's just a special ops team with people who just happen to have powers.
I'm like, Court and I were so poetic, and then you gave us that.
Blue-collar superheroes, man. That's what they are. He's totally
yeah.
right.
Yeah, see? You should have said it like that. I'm just saying.
Well, that's two double hyphen words.
Yeah, that's super cheating, but it's okay. Hyphenated words are one word. Anyway.
Well, then it's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious wonderful.
Fantastic.
This is probably one of the better movies that we've done, so yes. No. Bottom line is, I would watch Hellboy 2 if you haven't seen Hellboy 2. Correct?
Yeah.
Court, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Have anything you want to plug with us?
Yeah, you have anything to plug real quick?
Well, you've already played promo. Our podcast for Cinema PsyOps is available on the Legion Network of Podcasts. That's Legion Network of Podcasts. Let me pull up the URL here real quick. I apologize. I wasn't prepared. That's legionpodcast.com/cinema-PsyOps. We drop an episode every Sunday.
Perfect. So, and definitely listen if you have not. It is delightful.
Cinema PsyOps, yes. Do that.
And where can we find us? Simply delightful. So you can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com. Also on Stitcher. You can find us on Google Play, and you can find us on iTunes.
Also, you can find us on our couch, sitting back-to-back, watching Hellboy 1.
Correct.
Back-to-back with Hellboy 2.
Correct.
Thank
All right.
you, Court, once
Court,
again.
Anybody else you want to throw anything out there for? Do you want to explain a little bit about the Legion podcast?
Yeah, the Legion podcast. Go ahead.
Legion podcast... Network is a group of podcasters that are brought together under the tutelage, if you will, of Bo Ransdale. He's an author and also a fellow podcaster. It's mostly horror films that Legion Podcast ends up covering for their stuff for podcasting, but Bo's kind of expanded it out a little bit and let other types of shows that have come in. I'm also going to be involved in a project that will be coming out soon on Legion Podcast called Obsessive Cinema Discourse. It's a group of very detail oriented gentlemen. It's like where podcasting worlds collide. It's myself, the Witch, who is from the podcast Bind on Equip, and Witch versus the Doomsday Clock. He's an Australian gentleman, and then we have a gentleman in England who is Boz, who's from Little Pot of Horrors, and the three of us kind of come together and just sort of nitpick our way through a film that we love, but also kind of rip it apart at the same time.
Like the Laugh Olympics of podcasts.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
It's like the Laugh Olympics of podcasts.
I would like to think so, yeah. It's kind of, I have a bromance going with Boz, and I have a serious man crush on Witch, and we just, it kind of came together really serendipitously because each of them were like, hey, we should do a podcast together to me. Like, I think Boz sent me a message, and then the Witch sent me a message. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to do that, guys, but I can't do two more new shows like that, even if we're going to do it once a month, you know? And then I ended up kind of suggesting, well, why don't all three of us just get together? And then it just kind of all fell together. It just synchronized.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And like I said, it's a once a month kind of show that will be coming out on Legion Podcast as well. And I mentioned The Witch versus the Doomsday Clock. He's also on Legion Podcast. I'm kind of in a little bit of a, let's call it a WWE style spat because I'll leak it out here. It's not real. It's just playing around with Hail Ming on Legion Podcast. It's over our filthy podcast versus their very cleaned up PG-13 podcast. And we're trying to fight for our right to stay filthy.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah.
We we want to develop a sort of story-wide or a network-wide story where all of the podcasts can get involved if they want to, and kind of string along a story narrative on top of the film reviews or video games or books or whatever else that people are talking about, where we have sort of a little extra layer for the network. And that's been a lot of fun so far, and it's been slowly developing the last couple of episodes.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, very cool, man. Well, definitely thank you for being here. We were so stoked that you could join us for this.
Thank you.
Fantastic review of everything. Definitely appreciate that. Stay on the line with me here for a second. I think we are going to run the end credits here in a
correct
moment.
But first, our apologies to Evan Dando.
Right, definitely our apologies to Evan Dando. we're still
always
sorry about that.
And so we appreciate you, Cord, for being on, and we're going to leave it at that. And remember, the sequel is king.